Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slot. He scores! Oh, Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Vic Nizar.
Getting the month kicked off with a positive show coming your way. Scott Rintoul, Vic Nizar, this is Canucks Central. How's life in Coquitlam today, buddy?
Do we have negative shows? We're always, we're not always positive, but I don't think we have negative shows.
We just don't always have positive news to deliver off the top of the show.
Fair.
All right. And we got Jarmo Kekalainen about to join us, which is pretty awesome.
Excited for that. Pretty good in Coquitlam. Sun's shining for the most part. No complaints, making the best of this reality.
Good for you. And it sounds like that reality is going to go on for quite some time. You got the announcement yesterday, April, May,
yes.
Possibly June.
Mm-hmm. We're dealing with this as we can, as we go along. And, you know, we've had discussions of, what could playoffs look like? And, you know, we've always saddled that with the comment of like, hey, best case scenario, most likely scenario is, you know, we're playing well into August, right? Or maybe that's when we start, because it's going to take some time for this to calm down. And what, you know, like the precautions that are being taken now are the right precautions and need to happen. But to me, this was always the most likely scenario of what was going to happen.
Well, and proof positive of that today, and I don't say that lightly, four more members of the Senators organization tested positive for COVID-19, and hopefully none of them have the awful side effects that come with COVID-19. Everybody, as we're learning, reacts a little bit differently. You're not sure who's going to have an adverse reaction to this virus and who's going to be able to get through it with not a ton of symptoms along the way. But this is the reality, and it's just a constant reminder of why this is going to take a while. It's been a while since the first NHL player tested positive, Bic, and we went, yeah, it was bound to happen. And now we've seen a few more, and hopefully the NHL fraternity, like we would wish for anybody else in the general populace, isn't affected to a great degree. But it's a constant reminder of how long this battle is going to take.
Yeah. In one regard, it's gone so fast here in 3 weeks where we get sent home. But like, this has been a lingering issue for longer than just that. Like, it's been in the news longer than just here 3 weeks. So there's going to be ramifications of, okay, now. And like, that's why like the testing and being able to track where people contracted it is so important. And because you could start to build a timeline of, okay, these people were there. We saw the map of like when the Utah Jazz played, they were the hub of the conversation when it comes to COVID-19 in the sports world. But you could see who they played in a week and what arenas those teams played in and how quickly it can span across not even just basketball, but into the NHL. So yeah, this is going to go on for a while. And how we deal with this leading up to the resolution of this is we are in control of very few things, but one of those is how we interact with each other and what the timeline looks like.
The Columbus Blue Jackets, as I said, we're going to have a positive show. We got a couple of positive stories to focus on. In this half, we're going to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets a lot. Second half, JT Miller did an extended interview today with All Media, and then he came on my program. We'll replay some of his comments, and everybody knows what a positive year he had. The Columbus Blue Jackets were one of the best stories in the National Hockey League, bar none this year, Bic. What they did, given what was expected externally, not internally, and I'm sure Jarmo Kekalainen will back that up when he joins us here in just a couple minutes' time. But from an external point of view, what they did was remarkable, where they finished up, how close they were to a wild card berth.
Yeah, so many people were willing to write off two teams, one in the East, one in the West. One was Minnesota, and the other was Columbus, right? Yes, there was the Detroits, New Jerseys, LAs of the world, but leading into this year, you know, the two teams that everyone was willing to poke holes at really quickly were those two teams. And, you know, both teams have been remarkable to keep themselves in the chase, put themselves in playoff spots. And in Columbus's case, obviously, as we left, they were in that wild card two spot. But not just that nobody expected this, but to overcome so many things they did beyond just coming into the season, they, you know, you're right, there's a handful of stories, but to me, they might take the cake as far as the most resilient seasons and are obviously the best story of the season.
Jarmo Kekäläinen came on this station a little under a year ago and talked about the deadline deals that he had made, and part of the reason that he was willing to do it and push all in last year was because they had people coming up in the organization that maybe the external populace hadn't heard of and other hockey fans hadn't heard of, but he was convinced that they had a strong enough organization to weather it if, in fact, the big names left, which they did. And boy, has he been proven right this year with the way the Blue Jackets have performed. Scott Rintoul-Biknazar now joined by the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Jarmo Kekäläinen, here on Canuck Central. Thank you very much for doing this, Jarmo. How are you?
Well, all things considered, I'm doing well and trying to keep my sanity and work from inside my house and convincing myself that if there's a job after hockey, I'm not going to have a home office. I'm going to try to go out somewhere and get myself an office so I can leave my house sometimes and get some activities in the neighborhood rather than just staying in and going for a jog a day.
That is a very familiar refrain to all of us. We're going through the exact same thing. We're on the west side of Canada. I'm assuming we find you in Ohio right now?
Yes, sir. I'm in Columbus, or in the suburbs of Columbus, Ohio, and quarantined like everybody else.
And what is the day-to-day like there right now as far as news break? And we're trying to just get a feel for what everybody is going through, because while we're all going through something similar, it's a little bit different depending on where you're located, Jarmo.
Yeah, I think Ohio and the governor here is taking it pretty seriously right from the start, and early compared to some of the other states. So we've been in quarantine for a while, ever since NHL sort of established the policy as well. So we've stayed inside for 2 weeks now, a little over, and two and a half. And schools are closed, kids are doing their stuff online. I have a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old, and they're pretty independent doing stuff online. And all the playgrounds and the public tennis courts and so forth, they're closed. All the indoor facilities are closed, whether it's a gym or restaurant or non-essential business, they're all closed. So it's pretty eerie here, actually. I had to go downtown today to pick something up from my office, and left at 8:30 in the morning. And normally it would be the only time in this city where you might run into some traffic, and there was nobody on the roads.
Yeah, again, that's something we can certainly relate to here in Vancouver. He is the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Jarmo Kekäläinen, with us here today on Sportsnet 650. As we look at your team this year, we were just talking on the way in that it is one of, if not the best story from a team perspective in the National Hockey League this year. When you look at what has been accomplished through 70 games of the regular season, what are you most proud of about this Blue Jackets team?
I'm proud of the whole team, basically. The way we play is about the team. It's not about individuals. It's not about the stars. And I think that we can survive. And we've proven that we can survive some stars leaving. We've never really been about stars. I think Artemi Panarin is probably the biggest star that we've had. Obviously, Bobrovsky won business, but despite those big holes, we've been able to just play the same team game that's made us successful. We never matched the stars of any of the opponents that we played last year in the playoffs. But as a team, we were able to challenge them and beat Tampa. So. I always keep saying it, hockey is a great team sport. If you believe in what you're doing as a team, if you believe in the system, everybody buys in, everybody's committed. It's amazing what you can accomplish. That's what we try to do every day, and that's the only way we're going to be successful or have been successful. So, it's been an interesting year because obviously there were a lot of question marks, and not only from the outside, but you can never be 100% convinced yourself, even though you believe in some of the guys like our young goaltenders that didn't have a lot of experience. It's a little bit of a waiting game when you find out and see if the projections that we had within the organization were right or wrong, and sometimes little nail biters here and there, especially when we're talking about goaltending.
It's been such an inspiring season to watch from afar because the team has had to constantly overcome something, not just what you're talking about, like outside opinions, but, you know, injuries and then just constantly evolving as the season goes along. Part of that, to me, it speaks to the overall team culture that you guys are so focused on the task at hand. Who in the organization is most responsible for kind of setting that culture?
Well, I don't think you can ever say that one person is responsible for setting the culture. I think that as a management team, we're trying to set up the culture by the way we work, by the way the guidelines and the regulations we set for our group, for how we conduct our business every day, whether it's in the office or in the locker room or on the ice or in the weight room. Obviously, the coaching staff's done a great job, and they're there every day. Setting the standard for the players and demanding and making sure that it's being executed every day. But at the end of the day, it's the locker room itself that is the only way to police itself, and that starts from the leaders, our captain Nick Foligno, our assistant captains Seth Jones, Boone Jenner, Cam Atkinson, and we have many leaders like that lead by example. And I think that's set the culture for the Blue Jackets the best way, is that guys in the locker room, they demand it from each other every day and no exceptions. And I think that's how we've had success as a team.
It's very much a collaborative effort. I get that. And, you know, I think we look at it as fans sometimes. There's such a focus on how GMs are doing their jobs and front office is making trades, signings, and draft picks. And then the direct focus goes on to the players, you know, trying to emulate what they do or critique what they do. Do you feel like the public forgets how valuable coaching staffs can be? Because it's supposed to be a collaborative effort, but so much focus goes on the other two at times.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, coaches are pretty big stars in the public eye too, and that's why they get paid the big bucks too. And I always say that after the players, they're the most important part of the organization because they set that standard every day, and they're the guardians of the standards. So I don't know. Maybe somebody undervalues or underestimates the importance of coaching. I certainly don't. We certainly don't as an organization. I think the coaching decisions or the coaching hiring decisions, firing decisions, and not just the head coach, but right through the assistants and development coaches and your coaching staff on your minor league affiliate. Those are all huge decisions for an organization when you want to evolve, when you want to keep improving, when you want to get better on the individual level first and then as a team. And we certainly put a lot of effort and importance into those decisions so that we have right people in place.
In conversation with the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Jarmo Kekäläinen, here on Canucks Central. John Tortorella obviously was in Vancouver for a year, so people know him a little bit. It's now his fifth year with you in Columbus. What have you learned about Torts over the course of these past 5 years that perhaps you didn't know when you hired him?
I learn every day something. I think he keeps learning something about me every day too. We have a good relationship. We speak our minds fairly straightforward, both of us. That's something that I appreciate about him, and I think he appreciates that about me. And there's no gray areas. It's often black and white. But once we get through it, it's the matters that might argue. It's not personal ever, and we don't get to any of the personal levels, arguments, if you want to call them that, even though we might argue hard on some issues. The one thing I appreciate and respect about him is that even though he's not a spring chicken anymore, he keeps trying to get better every day and trying to find ways to get better as a coach. And I really think that the people in any profession that all of a sudden start thinking that they've seen it all, they know it all, and they don't need to get any better is the start of the big decline or or even time to retire. But that's never been an issue with Torts, and that's probably one of the reasons why he's been in the league for a long time and has been very successful.
It's a really good point, and there are different ways to learn. And you made it clear last year that one of those ways that your team had to learn was by having some measure of playoff success, which you did in sweeping past the Tampa Bay Lightning. What carryover effect have you seen with the players that have remained with the organization from last year's playoff win over Tampa?
Well, I think confidence. I think it gives everybody confidence in our group, and I think that was part of the motivation that we had early on this year, even though we got off to a slow start, that we've had a lot of success with this core group. I think in the last 4 years in the regular season, there's four teams that have had more wins than we have. And I think it's Tampa Bay, Washington, Boston, and Pittsburgh. So we're in pretty good company there in the regular season. So there's no reason why we couldn't have success in the postseason as well. I mean, we've proven that with, we had one over 100-point year and made the playoffs 3 years in a row and winning record, so forth. So we should expect success in the playoffs, and we did, even though we had to face the best team in the regular season in the history of the league. But that's why a lot of people were aggravated about the doubts that we were supposed to be awful this year, because it's the same core group that we still have, you know, minus a couple guys. But as I said early on, that we believe in the team concept, and we believe that collectively we can replace even guys like Panarin, who's, you know, in my opinion, one of the best players in the entire league. But collectively and as a team, the way we play, we can even replace the biggest of the stars. So, I think that the best lesson for us was that, yes, we believed in our group. We had reason to believe in our group, and it just added to our confidence. And even though we got off to a slow start this year, we were able to regain our form. And I think we were one of the hottest teams in the league through December and January and February.
Jarmo Kekäläinen with us here today on Sportsnet 650. And as you referenced before, the stars, the replacements for them, the goaltenders were a big part of that for you this year, your young goaltenders. Obviously, the players themselves, the goalies, they deserve credit. Outside of that, who within your organization deserves a little more credit than perhaps he is getting for the development of these players and the way they've burst onto the scene?
Well, I think Manny Legacy's done a good job with our goaltenders. But I have to give credit to a guy who's now in Vancouver, Ian Clark, who's the goalie coach here when we drafted Elvis Merzlikins and Jonas Korpisalo. And he did a lot of work with those guys, both in development and finding them, especially Merzlikins. I mean, Ian Clark was relentless in studying tape on goaltenders. And Merzlikins is not the only one. We have a guy by the name of Daniil Tarasov who's our best goalie prospect that is not in North America right now. He's a Russian goalie who's almost 6'6" tall, played in the Finnish league this year, and is an excellent prospect. And we have huge expectations for him. And that guy was found by Ian Clark as well. So you guys have a good eye for goalie talent there in Vancouver, as well as a good coach.
How long, because that position is so... It's so interesting, so layered, and so difficult sometimes for a non-goalie to view it and try to pick that up. Like, how much trust do you have in relationships to your coaches, and how long does it take to build that for someone, you know, that's not part of your scouting staff to say, okay, we have some reliance on you to pick some guys out for us?
Well, I think you always got to let people do their jobs. You got to believe in their professional ability for why they were hired. Same thing goes for whether it's an amateur scout or pro scout or somebody who's scouting the goalies. I think you got to let people do their jobs. That's why they're hired. And even though I did amateur scouting, for example, for 15 years and was in charge of the two different organizations of drafting with Ottawa Senators and St. Louis Blues, and now people assume that I'm doing and telling our amateur scouts exactly what we need to do. It's the opposite. The experience has taught me to stay out of the way, because there's no chance for me to get to see the guys enough to be able to overrule the scouts that do the miles and watch those players again and again and again throughout the season. It's just impossible for me to get there that much and be part of that process. I ask questions and challenge them every once in a while. And if I get to see some players enough to challenge them, then I'll do it even more. But it's pretty hard. And I don't believe in super scouts. I believe in guys that work hard and watch those players over and over and over again. And that's what it takes to recognize the most important parts of the talent, which is the instinct and hockey sense and the character and the heart.
Especially when it comes to now, how has your pre-draft process been changed because of the stoppage? Like, does this force you to become more reliant on the scouts? Because, you know, we're not going to have in-person visits. We're not going to have the combine. Your interaction with the prospects to come into the NHL is going to be minimized much more.
Yeah, they're going to have to get a little bit more creative here too. Obviously, we have a lot of tape available these days, and it's a lot easier than it used to be in the days when I started scouting, and when you didn't even have lineups. You'd go to a game in Czech Republic or Russia, and good luck trying to find the lineups and names and numbers and birth dates and so forth. Now you can get just the shifts cut out automatically from SportsLogic and on even the junior leagues and the pros, and take that 18 or 22 minutes, whichever the player plays, and just watch those shifts. And or if you want to break it down to other situations, you can do that too, and just watch his scoring chances or shots on goal or penalty killing or power play, whatever. It's so easy nowadays compared to the old days. But you know, the background work now, you won't be able to have interviews. You may not be able to get any physical testing results because the combine's been canceled. We got to get creative there. We got to dig deep. We got to get into the information that otherwise we didn't have to get into, because it was easily available for us through combine and the interviews and all that. So yeah, our guys are still working. They're doing their watching the tapes. And March is always the busiest month, especially for the scouts the head scouts that are crossing over into each areas in the hockey world, from Europe to Western Canada, and it's a busy time now. It's got to be busy time on tape, and then making phone calls, getting FaceTime calls, Skyping people, whatever it takes to dig some information from your network, from your sources, and then working on that list and trying to do the best you can to have it in the right order come draft time.
Columbus Blue Jackets general manager Jarmo Kekäläinen joining Bick Nizar and Scott Rintoul on Canuck Central. We're all learning to deal with what's happening in the world right now. And, you know, as much as you want to continue your own business, there's, you know, real world consequences to how this impacts the NHL. What's your biggest worry heading into an offseason as it pertains to this reality? Not necessarily with your team, but just for the NHL.
Well, right now, my biggest worry is just to get back to normal and lose as few human lives as possible. I'm worried for my parents, for my family, making sure that everybody stays healthy. I really hope that everybody obeys the regulations and the rules of social distancing, so that we can stop this and get back to normal. I mean, even if you're not worried about your health, should be worried about things getting back to normal, because the longer this goes, the more damage it's going to do in the society in many different areas. And that's why we need to stay home. We need to, you know, obey the rules and flatten the curve and make sure we get back to normal as soon as possible. And then we can worry about hockey too. It won't be any sooner than that, that's for sure. So let's worry about the health of everybody first, and then get back to hockey as soon as we can.
Well said, and I echo those sentiments. That's priority one every single day. And if you're anything like us, that's how you start your day. But then you find that diversion of your job, or you find that diversion of sports, and a way that you can focus on that and compartmentalize for a little bit. With that in mind, one final question from me. What is it like trying to navigate the financial landscape of the NHL? Or do you pay that any attention right now because you just don't know, Yarmo?
Well, we're trying to go through all kinds of different scenarios here in our within our management group, and you know, it's pretty safe to say that I don't think there's going to be a big increase on salary cap, and I'm saying that with a little bit of sarcasm. We'll see where it goes. It's all question marks right now. We're all hoping that we can get back to playing and salvaging some of the season, somebody lifting the cup, playing some playoff games. It'll be good for everybody. It'll be good for fans. It'll be good for franchises. It'll be good for the league if that happens. And then we'll see what next year and the landscape looks like. But right now, we're just kind of going through any different scenario of what it could look like and what we should do if it looks like that, what we should do if it looks completely different than what we had thought of. So we have a lot of smart people working in our front office, so we get a lot of different ideas and opinions on what we should focus on. We have a good discussion going on regularly, and we're trying to prepare the best we can.
Well, we wish you best in those preparations, but more than anything, we wish you good health, Yarmo. Thank you very much for taking the time today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That is Yarmo Kekäläinen, general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. A lot there, Bic. We can react to it on the other side. JT Miller still to come as well. His comments earlier today after an extended interview with the Canucks leading scorer. This is Canucks Central on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
As always, you can find us at 650, 650. It's a Subway text message inbox. If you have a question or a comment during the course of Canucks Central, you can find myself, Bic Nazar there, Justin Morris said doing a fine job getting us on the air and keeping us there as well. I heard a name in there that you might recognize, Bic. That name was Ian Clark. Yarmo Kekäläinen was pretty quick to give him a lot of credit for everything that's developed goaltending-wise in Columbus over this past season.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that I've been trying to say here for 18 months of, like, one of the more valuable people in this organization is Ian Clark, because if you want to build edges, institutional edges that you can always rely on, okay, one thing is you don't pay, like, your coaching staff, your scouting staff, there's no salary cap on that, right? So if you have a guy who can create an edge for you on the ice because of goaltending, well, okay, feel free to double down on that as much as you can and also retain that person for as long as you can. The Canucks have had a good history here, Rolly Melanson, Ian Clark now, of, you know, having guys that can provide you goaltending, upper half goaltending, and hopefully do it at a reasonable cost to you on the ice. And you know, this is the discussion when it comes to Jacob Markstrom. It's like, do you want to go to $6.5 million, or do you want to bet on Ian Clark? Look, and I think there's a way to marry both. That number that we've talked about is, you know, five and some change when it comes to Jacob Markstrom, just below six. And so that, to me, like, that's a reasonable number. Plus you get the elite goaltending. That's kind of what you want. It's interesting to hear, you know, Yarmo Kekäläinen and praise a former employee to say he's done such great work to build us a stable that we can overcome so many issues. And there's more to come still.
You're right about coaching. And this is highlighted in every single sport. Obviously, every team, every general manager wants the best personnel. Hey, give me the best players. I will take that. But to your point, it's almost worth more knowing that you are going to get the best out of whatever personnel you have if you have the right coaches in place. You and I use NFL analogies all the time. What's one of the things they say about Andy Reid? Look, whoever's playing quarterback there It might not be Patrick Mahomes. It might be Alex Smith. He is going to get the most out of Alex Smith that is possible. And that's kind of the analogy I would use with Ian Clark. He's developed this reputation of, whether it's Jacob Markstrom or Thatcher Demko or Elvis Merzlikins, who he saw something in that was going to translate to what he was going to be able to teach within that organization. If you can get the best out of what you have, that actually might be worth more than just having the raw talent in some cases.
And I do look at it, obviously, here in Vancouver, right? Like, having the time to build up that stable of goaltenders. And, okay, yes, he can get the most out of Thatcher Demko and Jacob Markstrom. And he's obviously doing tremendous work with it. I'm not disputing that. But those guys were here prior to his arrival, right? If you can... If there's a reliance on Ian Clark to say, hey, what type of goalies should we be trying to draft? Should we be trying to recruit as college free agents and whatnot? And you start going through the list of guys. Is there a prototype that he likes to work with, and can he build from there, right? And so when you look at guys like Michael DiPietro, Jake Keeley, and on down the list, like, I'm excited for this next group to see what they look like, because those all fall under the umbrella of Ian Clark.
Really good conversation with Jarmo Kekäläinen. I thought he was pretty open and honest at the end. Hey, we got guys working projections every single day, looking at next year's salary cap and the implications of a loss of revenue of this or of that. What should we be focused on? But really, we just don't know. We're trying, but we don't know.
It's so tough right now, right? It's... And I see a text message in coming in here that we got earlier in the show, just because we were talking about the latest stoppages and the latest announcements from our government officials and unsigned text years. Like, I personally don't see the NHL playing hockey or playoff hockey in August and then turn around and have a training camp the following season. It's September. Does it make sense? The greedy owners are just got to take their losses and call the season. And look, I understand and that sentiment, and there's plenty of that out there. But we have to remember, like, there is a place in society for sports, obviously, right? And there's going to come a point when it's going to be important to try to provide some normalcy to our lives again. And I think there's still a goal in to have sports in whatever capacity. I understand that there's bigger issues at hand here, but down the road, we're all going to return to normal, and the leagues themselves are going to want to do it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I don't see it as any different than any other business that wants to get back up and running as soon as possible here, Bic. Airlines, what do we think? Oh, the people who own airlines, they've got a ton of money. You think they don't want to get back working as soon as possible? You think restaurant groups don't want to get back working as soon as possible? And it's not just about the guys at the top. And I understand the sentiment, but every business right now that has been smashed because of what we're going through with COVID-19 wants to get up and running ASAP. And it's not just the guys at the top. Think about coaches in the NHL that are trying to earn extensions for next year. Think about players who are going to be going into contract negotiations. Yes, they make more money than we all do. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean they feel any better about their security moving forward right now, does it?
No, of course not. And like, I get it. We kind of briefly talked about this yesterday about, you know, athletes, they make more than everyone else. And we were talking about more in like the CBA discussions of escrow and all of that. But you got to remember, like, the phrase I hate is, well, it's a privilege to play these games. No, it's really hard work to get to where these guys have. Do athletes have privileges? Of course they do. We would all love to roll up to a restaurant or a club and wish it was first come, first serve. But, you know, guess what? If an athlete strolls up, they're going to get in first. That's a privilege because they're an athlete. However, getting it to the league, totally different situation. And, you know, it depends on the context of your conversation. This is their guys' career. I understand they make a lot of money, but it's a reflection of how much money gets put into the sport in general. So we got to remember what we're talking about here. Our goal is to get people back to work and resume normalcy. That's what this is about.
Yeah, no question about it. Obviously, there are people at the top that have a lot more money and are able to weather this storm a lot better financially, but there are a lot of people that are way down the pecking order that get impacted financially by this as well. And some of the people that don't get thought about, Bic, people in our industry that are camera operators, people who do lighting. I've got a neighbor who he relies on events for his job.
Yep.
And he is excellent. He's one of the best professional lighters in this market, in any market for that matter. But guess what? There's no gatherings right now. He has no work. All of a sudden, you can do some of this stuff again. There's a lot more people that get employed than just, hey, this is a greedy owner bringing in his.
Absolutely. It's especially, it's so bizarre when we consider like how much outcry there's been for work. Are you taking care of your workers from these pro sports teams? Well, getting back to having these arenas open to do exactly what you're talking about, concerts, all the people that host, you know, lighting, sound, all those, all that, like those people need to get back to work too. It's far reaching what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, we're all being impacted differently, but we're all in the same boat to a certain degree, and we got to help each other out. That's a message we've been very clear on day in, day out on this program. Scott Rental, Bick Nizar, this is Canucks Central. I do want to turn our attention a little bit to the guy who's led this team in scoring. And you don't have to answer this right away, Bick, because we're going to hear a couple of clips from JT Miller. But I would throw this out to our listening audience as well. What has impressed you most about JT Miller this year? What is the most impressive aspect of his season? I didn't ask him that in quite those words, but I did ask him when we had a conversation earlier today, when he looks back at the 69 games to date, what is he most proud of when it comes to his first year in Vancouver?
Well, you know, I think that I try my hardest to, you're not going to have it for 82 games. It's just the way it is. But to bring, you know, I've said this in interviews before, you know, try not to bring your C game, bring your B minus game. And I think that I've tried my best to realize that, you know, it's hockey players are stubborn and we all think that we're going to be able to fix it and right the ship during every game. But I think realizing when you like, man, it's just not my night, you know, don't make it a bad game. Just make it, just get through the game. You know, we play again in a day or two. And I think that I'm proud of the way that, you know, I, even when I have not brought it for a couple games in a row, I mean, that happens, but I didn't make it a bad game. You know, I think I tried to make it, you know, just got to get through this game. And I think that that's something that, you know, coaches have told me when I was younger and I tried to take that with me. And I think that that's important for young players. It's easy to get down and, you know, make one bad game and all of a sudden you're at your sixth bad game in a row. I think that when you learn that, you know, you just kind of get through it and sometimes it's, you don't feel that fast out there or you don't feel that smooth with the puck. You need to realize that, you know, you just got to do what you can to help and don't get in the team's way. And I think that that's something that I've learned this year and probably done the best at that I have in my career.
And quite often that only comes with time. What's your reaction to what he had to say there?
I'll react to that and I'll answer your question. What's impressed me the most? That, right? It's that consistency of what he's brought. Like, I was high on JT Miller when he got acquired by Vancouver and I was excited. I didn't see this, what he's done so far this year. And that's more surprising. But what's impressed me the most is exactly what he's talking about. There's not a lot of bad nights. I'm just trying to think. I can think of like maybe one throughout the year where you felt like he was responsible to a loss or something like that. Like he's been so consistent in bringing exactly what he's talking about. Make it a B minus game. And that's such an important part of being a pro is being consistently consistent. Why do we always talk about, we never have a conversation of if is Tyler Mott going to go into the lineup? Because we know he's going to go into the lineup. He brings exactly what he is every single time. And coaches love consistency. Even if you are a flawed player, they love consistency because they know what you're getting, what they are getting when they put you out into the ice. It's easier to game plan when you know what you're going to get from a specific player. And then we're just talking about varying degrees. JT Miller, he can have 10 out of 10 games. And his worst game is like a 7 out of 10. And that's really important for coaches and also building a culture of a team of, okay, here's a guy who's hopefully echoing that mantra, that mindset to the rest of the players of, hey, it's not about if you're bringing it every time. It's, okay, what level are you doing? Sometimes you just don't have it. That's real life. We all go through ups and downs, but there's a certain baseline you have to try to meet. You can't be responsible for losses.
And that, Bick, to me, is the action behind what JT Miller said he wanted here in Vancouver. And Travis Green referenced this last week when you guys talked to him on the program. He said, look, it's one thing to ask for the opportunity. And we had the chance to provide JT Miller with the opportunity he wanted to be a bigger part of this team that he thought he could take on more responsibility in Tampa, both on the ice and off it. So we said, you know what? You're coming to a group where that opportunity, it will absolutely be afforded to you. But you got to walk the walk, man. And JT Miller has walked the freaking walk. Boy, has he ever. I've been so impressed with this guy. The 72 points, the 27 goals, that's great. But it's the standard he has helped set for this organization moving forward that is the most impressive aspect of it.
Yeah, he's become the alpha male of the team, right? And I'm not saying he's the captain and strip Horvat. That's not this conversation, because it's a collective group of how you lead the team. But there's a gap between, okay, the guys they've paid to help develop professional habits, like Jay Beagle, right? He got brought here. Yes, he's part of the leadership group, but he's really here to just show the guys how to be a pro, how to extract everything out of your talent to become a pro, because that's the Jay Beagle story, that he's basically never given up. So there's those guys. And then there's the future core of the team, Pettersson, Hughes, Besser, Horvat. So there's a huge age gap between the group I was just talking about and the Beagles, Sutters of the world. And JT Miller slides right in the middle. And he's a perfect bridge between, okay, I know what these guys are talking about of how to be consistent, show up every day, get more out of your career. And I know what these guys are going through. They're trying to, you know, figure out how to survive in the NHL. And also, there's a big burden upon them to lead this team into the next phase and the next era of Canucks hockey. And he's done a great job of mirroring those. And I think Bo Horvat's going to be a great captain. But look, let's face it, it's year one of that. He's going to be dealing with a lot of issues himself of learning how to handle all the responsibilities of that. Having another guy in the room like JT Miller, who's one of your star players and also one of your leaders now, like, that's huge. And he's done it year one. It's become very obvious how important he is in the room. Like, that's awesome.
And one of the challenges associated with that, Vic, for JT Miller, and I think anybody out there listening who's ever gone into a new workplace can relate to this, you want to bring something to the table. And yes, you want to have more responsibility, and you want to be a go-to guy, if you will. But you're also trying to fit in with a new environment, and he didn't really know how he was going to fit in here in Vancouver. He's played in Tampa Bay the last few years. He was in New York before that, and he can ask around, and he can ask buddies about personalities on the team, but he doesn't really know until he gets here. And that was one of the other questions I asked him. How did he strike the balance between fitting in with a brand new team and being accepted and also trying to become and establish himself as a leader with this group?
That's definitely something, because they have good, great leadership here. Guys that have been here a long time, guys that have, you know, like Beagle, that's won a Stanley Cup and as an older player. And it's, I think bringing my game to the table and playing the right way and playing my game is the best way to lead is by example. And I think that I'm a really talkative guy. So I think that just, you know, naturally, I think my game fit in well with, you know, some of the leadership that they have here. We have leaders in the team that, you know, are not necessarily talkative guys, but they lead by example. And I think that speaks volumes to how we need to play. And at the end of the day, that's how you want everybody playing, you know, the right way and the same way and buying into the game plan. And, you know, it's definitely something I'm learning still in my career is, you know, when to lead and when to just play and when to be, you know, communicating with your teammates. And it's something I've also taken a lot of pride in this year is trying to be a better leader. And, you know, it's something I'm just going to keep learning on and I'll hopefully take to another level, you know, if we resume or when we resume or next year or whenever it may be.
There are a lot of leaders in the National Hockey League in any sport for that matter, Bick, that don't say a lot. And Miller referenced some of those here in Vancouver. But the way he talks about it and the more you think about this group, I'm not saying there was a void, but there was an opportunity. He saw it. He stepped right in. He is a guy who talks a lot. Even the likes of Tyler Toffoli has commented on that upon arriving here in Vancouver. And that's part of the reason he fit in so well with this group.
Oh, absolutely. And think of, like, I think about that conversation we had with Travis Green of, okay, if you want those things, A, you've got to step up. And if this is something that JT Miller hadn't done before, this was a challenge to him. And if it doesn't challenge you, it's not going to change you. And that to me is, like, we've seen him evolve throughout the season as well. And look, it's always great to see someone take that responsibility and thrive under it. That's the key here. He recognized an opportunity. He's put that onus on himself and he had an expectation he was going to do it. And now he's starting to have a real impact. We've seen it, how he interacts with Jake Virtanen. We've seen it obviously with Elias Pettersson. He's spoken to many times that because JT Miller is so physical, well, I feel like I have to bring a little bit of that out as far as how they play on the puck, right? Not necessarily, oh, I'm going to start crashing and banking, but, you know, he's shown him ways to play against defenders with some physicality. That's important. It's not necessarily he's dragging them into the fight, but he brings a certain style of his game that he's learned from, and now Pettersson can apply it. That reverberates throughout the locker room.
Well, and part of that comes with being on the same page as your head coach and having the same mentality. And JT Miller and Travis Green, they seem to be very like-minded with their approach, Bick. And I think that is something he said that we didn't hear in that clip, but he said during the course of the interview, he said, that's part of why this is too bad, because these last 10 to 15 games, those are so much fun. And that's exactly what you play for in the playoffs right after that. And we don't get to go through that. And Travis Green, you remember, whether they were winning or they were losing these critical games in the month of March, Travis Green relished the opportunity to finally be here after 2 years of not being involved in it.
It's huge. And that's also why I asked the question about setting a culture to Jarmo Kekäläinen. And it was interesting to say, look, this is a collaborative effort, right? Part of it comes from ownership. Part of it comes from management. Part of it comes from coaches. Part of it comes from players, because they're the ones that have to execute all these plans. But it's a collaborative effort, and it relies so much on trust from each level and discipline that each group can say, hey, I trust that they're doing their job, and I'm disciplined enough to stay out of their lanes. And when we have to collaborate, and when we have to have, you know, moments where we have to work together, it's going to show that we've built that trust among each other. You talk about that relationship with Travis Green and JT Miller, how much trust there is to, okay, you're part of my leadership group, to send a message to the rest of the group too. It's not always Travis Green that has to, you know, hit the hammer for some players. That can come from inside the locker room as well. And that building a culture is so important. I know we get stuck in the debate of culture and talent all the time, but they both share equal parts of this, and you can't survive without one without the other. And so this is really a big part of how to build something bigger than just, you know, a guy who can contribute 60 points. It's about everything.
Look at what we just talked about with the Columbus Blue Jackets and Jarmo Kekäläinen, yep. That whole discussion we had. That's a perfect example of what you're talking about. Good show today. This hour, zip by, buddy. I know you got to get the program ready to rock this afternoon at 4. What's coming up?
A full show today. David Amber's going to join us at 4:35. We're going to touch on some NFL draft stuff as well. Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus join us at 5:30. We'll speak to Patrick Johnson now at 5 o'clock, back at home after his isolation.
Sounds good. That's great stuff. That's coming up on the program. Bick and I will be back with Canucks Central tomorrow. Next, it is Reach Deep. Speaking of drafts, speaking of prospects, Cam Robinson from Dauber Hockey is going to join the boys at 1:30 this afternoon. Shane O'Brien, you know he'll have some interesting and humorous stories to share about isolation and quarantine as well. Great stuff. Thanks for all of your contributions throughout the course of the day. Keep yourself safe. Keep yourself healthy. Let's do this together. Coming up next, it's Reach Deep right here on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.